Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter, and Pete Musto. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will bring us America's Presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Brandon Alexander is a former Google engineer who is trying to change American agriculture through robotics. Alexander operates a machine-powered farm. He recently introduced his star robot, named Angus, to the Associated Press. The long white robot weighs more than 450 kilograms. Like other robots, it is equipped with cameras and mechanical arms to automatically perform many different jobs. Angus is a major part of operations at Alexander's indoor robot farm, about 40 kilometers south of San Francisco. The 743-square-meter farm uses a hydroponic system that grows plants without soil. The plants grow inside equipment that provides a continuous flow of water. The indoor farm uses electrical light instead of sunlight. This kind of farm uses much less water and does not require human labor to run. The main job for Angus is to move thousands of plants around the farm from small containers to larger ones as they grow. Angus also carries plants to another robot that does not have a name yet. Angus moves slowly to complete its work. But the robot is very strong and can lift about 300 kilograms. For now, the farm uses humans to collect vegetables and other crops when they are ready. But Alexander says he is working on a robot that will eventually take over that job too. Alexander helped start the company Iron Ox after leaving Google, where he worked on robotics at the company's Google X project. He teamed up with another former Google employee, John Binney. Together, they founded Iron Ox. Before launching the company, the two men thought about how they could use their engineering knowledge and skills to do something more meaningful. If we can feed people using robots, what could be more impactful than that? Alexander said. Iron Ox's website says the hydroponic growing system uses 90% less water. It also said the growing method is up to 30 times more productive than growing crops on land. Alexander said growing food robotically throughout the year in major cities will provide a more consistent and fresh product. Most of the vegetables sold in the U.S. are grown in California, Arizona, Mexico, and other nations. That means that many people in U.S. cities are eating vegetables that are nearly a week old by the time they arrive in stores. Iron Ox is currently negotiating with several San Francisco area restaurants that have expressed interest in buying vegetables, Alexander said. The company also expects to begin selling its products to local stores next year. And they are going to make the best salads you ever tasted, he said. Indoor farms operate all year and are not generally affected by bad weather. Iron Ox said this will permit the company to provide a steady flow of goods without major price changes. During the next few years, Iron Ox said it plans to open robot farms in other areas near U.S. cities. The plans call for the farms to be built inside greenhouses instead of large indoor spaces. These designs will use mostly natural sunlight to greatly cut electricity costs and save energy. Some environmental experts say robotic farming is also likely to grow because of population. The number of people living on Earth is expected to reach 10 billion by 2050. The world's population is currently about 7.5 billion. A report by the World Resources Institute says such growth will make it important to find ways to feed more people without further harming the environment. I'm Brian Lynn.
As trade tensions between China and the United States worsen, a debate is intensifying in China over the purpose of private and state-owned companies. The debate has even led to fears that the country's communist-led government is preparing to nationalize private industries, observers say. Under Xi Jinping's leadership, the Chinese Communist Party has begun re-establishing its power over every part of society, including businesses. In June, the party announced that it was requiring that all companies listed on Chinese stock markets set up party organizations for their workers. Over the past 2 weeks, tensions with the United States have increased. During that time, a number of business-related stories appeared on the Internet suggesting that it was time for private companies to step aside. The stories called on China to move toward a large-scale centralized economy in which private and public companies are mixed. In one article, financier Wu Xiaoping wrote, "The private economy has accomplished its mission to help the public economy develop, and it should gradually step aside." These ideas received some criticism, even from Chinese state media. But the fact that the article was not immediately taken down was a sign that the government wanted to see how people would react, said Frank Xie. He is an associate professor of marketing at the University of South Carolina, Aiken. In China, when there is something that the government doesn't want people to hear, it won't survive. As soon as it surfaces on the Internet, it will be deleted and removed, Xie said. And yet this thing, the call by this guy, stayed there for so long. Critics were also unhappy with a more recent statement. It came from Chu Xiaoping, Deputy Secretary of the Ministry of Personnel and Social Affairs. Chu said, that private companies need to be more democratic. He said they also should let more people serve in management positions and help strengthen the leadership of the Communist Party. Chinese officials have promised that private companies would be looked after. During a visit to Liaoning Province last month, President Xi urged private companies to feel secure. Xi promised that the party would develop, support, guide, and protect private industry. It is not clear if his comments meant getting more involved in the workings of private companies. Private business leaders are deeply concerned. They worry that China's economy will contract, noted Lu Shui-Chi, an associate professor of economics at Peking University. Also, some Chinese fear the country's leaders may sacrifice private companies to keep state-owned businesses from failing. Liu said that even with the promises by Chinese officials, the power that state-owned businesses enjoy is unlikely to change. State enterprises have long controlled profitable industries in China. They also have long been considered centers of corruption. State-owned enterprises have rights to 70% of the country's financial resources. Yet they are responsible for about 30% of the national economy. Private companies are responsible for 80% of all jobs in China and 60% of the economic growth. Many people inside and outside of China believe state-owned enterprises are slowing China's economic growth and are a barrier to free trade. They also are a main issue in the U.S. trade dispute with China. Yet the Chinese Communist Party is likely to continue its effort to expand the size of state-controlled businesses. Whether it is nationalizing private enterprises or making state-owned enterprises bigger, it is all about expanding control, said Darson Chu of the Taiwan Institute of Economic Research. For China's government, Chu said, expanding the state-operated enterprises would make it easier to plan the economy. That is the opposite of what U.S. President Donald Trump is asking China to do. If China moves in that direction, the trade war between the countries will continue, said Frank Xie. It's only going to encourage Trump to move to the next step, with another $267 billion in tariffs, Xie said. But China is facing serious risks, and it is not just the trade war. The value of share prices on China's stock market is at its lowest level in nearly 4 years. And industrial growth has slowed in each of the past 4 months. I'm Mario Ritter.
You probably have heard about the Trojan horse. Tradition says the ancient Greeks used a large wooden horse to trick enemy forces and capture the city of Troy. Now, researchers say a similar plan of attack could help doctors destroy bacterial infections that are resistant to antibiotic drugs. Scientists say the decreasing effectiveness of antibiotics is among the most critical problems facing modern medicine. Drug-resistant bacteria have become increasingly difficult to defeat in recent years. Scientists use the term superbug when talking about such bacteria. In the United States, researchers wondered if superbugs could be tricked into taking a molecule that looks like food but causes problems once inside them. The researchers are with the University of Washington's School of Medicine. They studied a superbug called Pseudomonas aeruginosa, which causes infections in wounds, the lungs, and other body parts. It can be a problem in patients whose ability to fight infection is weakened by cancer or conditions such as AIDS. The researchers were interested in iron, an important nutrient for bacteria during infection. It causes the bacteria to grow and spread. The researchers looked for ways to limit and even stop the spread. Microbiology professor Pradeep Singh said they came up with the idea of using a chemical mimic to deploy an antimicrobial drug to fight the bacteria. The researchers decided to use gallium, another metal, because of its similarity to iron. In laboratory studies, bacteria developed resistance to gallium at low rates. The researchers found that gallium's effectiveness was increased when it was used in combination with some existing antibiotics. These findings led the researchers to test gallium in mice and then in human patients. In the mice, the researchers found that a single dosage of gallium cured lung infections that usually killed the animals. The human tests involved 20 patients with the lung disease cystic fibrosis. Professor Christopher Goss told VOA the gallium was slowly given to the patients in a liquid solution over 5 days. And while the metal cleared from the blood, it moved to the lungs, helping the patients breathe easier for up to a month. Goss described gallium as a Trojan horse. Gallium not only fails to nourish bacteria as iron would, it actually harms them, he said. The results are reported in the publication Science Translational Medicine. More research is needed to confirm gallium's safety and effectiveness as a treatment. But the study's results suggest that the plan of attack that ended the Trojan War might be helpful in the modern-day battle against superbugs. I'm Pete Musto.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about James Buchanan, the 15th President of the United States. He was the third in a series of unsuccessful presidents. Millard Fillmore and Franklin Pierce had failed to resolve the country's increasing division over slavery. Democratic Party officials hoped Buchanan could do better. After all, he was a gifted lawyer and had been a member of the U.S. Congress, a Secretary of State, and a diplomat. But Buchanan was not so sure he could resolve the country's problems. He was right. He was the last president before the American Civil War. James Buchanan was born in the northern state of Pennsylvania. His father was a businessman, and his family was financially successful. Buchanan, the oldest son in a family with 11 children, received a good education. He attended Dickinson College in Pennsylvania and soon began working as a lawyer. His abilities earned him a good deal of money and a place in the state's legislature. But they were not able to win him a wife. As a young man, Buchanan fell in love with and proposed marriage to a young woman from a wealthy family. She accepted, but her father opposed the union. One day, his fiancée wrote Buchanan a letter saying she had reconsidered and decided not to marry him after all. 3 days later, she unexpectedly died. Buchanan was heartbroken. He promised never to marry anyone else, and he did not. To date, James Buchanan is the only U.S. president who never married. When he entered the White House, his niece served as his first lady. Even with problems in his personal life, Buchanan went on to have a strong career as a national politician. He hoped his party would nominate him as its candidate for president. But in the 1840s and early 1850s, the Democrats nominated other candidates. Finally, in 1856, the party chose Buchanan. But by then, he was no longer sure he wanted to be president. He believed the country would soon be at war. Violence had already broken out in the western territory of Kansas. White settlers there had clashed over whether Kansas would enter the Union as a slave or free state. In one dramatic event, an anti-slavery activist named John Brown had murdered several pro-slavery settlers. President Buchanan had clear ideas about slavery. He said in his inaugural speech that voters in the territories, a group made up of white men, should be able to decide the issue for themselves. In the same speech, Buchanan urged Americans to support an important Supreme Court ruling that became known as the Dred Scott decision. 2 days later, the court's justices announced the majority opinion in that case. The opinion said, "The federal government did not have the power to control slavery in the territories." In addition, the court declared that enslaved people were not U.S. citizens. They were property, it said. Enslaved people did not have any more rights than a horse or a chair. Buchanan hoped the decision would stop the country's debate over slavery. Instead, it made the debate even more intense. During his presidency, Buchanan took two other actions that increased tensions and damaged his public image. First, he tried to persuade Congress to accept a state constitution for Kansas. The Constitution permitted slavery, although a majority of Kansas voters had not agreed to it. The U.S. House of Representatives decided not to follow President Buchanan's wishes. They permitted Kansans to vote again on the Constitution. This time, Kansas voters rejected it. A majority agreed instead to seek admission into the Union as a free state. Buchanan's image also suffered because of an event known as the raid on Harper's Ferry. The raid was led by John Brown, the anti-slavery activist who had murdered pro-slavery settlers in Kansas. This time, Brown hoped to create an armed rebellion of anti-slavery activists and freed slaves. To get weapons, Brown and his men attacked a federal arsenal about 110 kilometers northwest of Washington, D.C. The armory was in the town of Harper's Ferry, in today's state of West Virginia. President Buchanan answered the raid by permitting federal troops to use force. The U.S. Marines surrounded Brown and his forces. They killed some and captured others, including Brown. A few weeks later, Brown was brought to trial, found guilty, and hanged. The event further divided Americans. Anti-slavery Northerners believed Brown was a hero. Pro-slavery Southerners believed he was a traitor. In general, Buchanan agreed with the Southerners. He said in a speech that Northerners should not tell Southerners what they could do in their states. But his words did not satisfy either side. For one thing, a main issue was whether slavery should be permitted in any new states. Buchanan did not comment on that point. At the end of his single term, Buchanan kept an earlier promise not to seek re-election. His party did not urge him to. Instead, Northern Democrats and Southern Democrats split. They nominated two different candidates. The Democrats' lack of unity provided an opening for a candidate from a new party. The Republican Party was comprised of Northerners who were against slavery. Their candidate was a lawyer without much experience in government. His name was Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln won the presidential election of 1860. In answer, the southern state of South Carolina withdrew from the Union. Buchanan, who was in the last weeks of his presidency, did not support the move. But he did not act to stop South Carolina either. He said the Constitution did not give him the power to force a state to stay in the Union. Following Buchanan's inaction, six other slaveholding southern states also seceded. Today, many historians agree James Buchanan was one of the worst American presidents. Buchanan had many good personal qualities, and he did not want to harm the country. Instead, a common belief is that he did not have the right skills to unite a divided nation. His behavior appeared to be guided by conflicting ideas. Buchanan said he opposed slavery and supported the Union, but he often took actions to protect slavery and help the South. Buchanan largely blamed anti-slavery activists and opposition politicians for the problems during his administration. But the public did not accept Buchanan's position. He was not respected after he left office, and he did not appear in public very often. Instead, the former president withdrew to his home in Pennsylvania until his death in 1868.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.